Welcome to Edu Leadership Radio. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and my goal with each episode is to bring you the best in professional practice for school leaders. So this week, I'm speaking with Jason DeRoner of Teach Boost. Jason, great to talk with you today. Thanks for making some time. Tell us a little bit about what you see happening in instructional leadership across the country as you work with different principals and help develop software that they use as instructional leaders to kind of collect feedback and provide that to staff members. What is the norm in the schools that you see?
Well, when I talk to principals, it seems that principals always want to be able to get in the classroom. They want to give teachers meaningful feedback frequently. They want to be observing instruction and providing support to teachers. I think it's tough to say a norm because you don't want to generalize.
Sure.
But what I tend to see is just a lot of desire to get in the classroom, a lot of tedium and a lot of requirements that prohibit that from happening. So it kind of leaves some longing on, you know, I wish I could be the principal I'd love to be and be 30 places at one time, but a lot of times that can't happen.
Yeah, I was reading a study not too long ago that said principals tend to define our jobs as instructional leaders. But if you look at the time use studies, you know, people who have researched what principals actually do, it tends to be somewhere 5 to 10% of their time that they're actually spending in classrooms on that stuff that, you know, that we actually want to be doing. And I think the barriers there are very real. What do you see as some of the biggest barriers to that kind of high quality, frequent feedback to teachers, both from administrators, but also from other teachers? Because I understand you have had some experience with that as well.
Yeah, so I think some of the barriers inherently, though, are just, I mean, you're the instructional support leader and you're also you're running the school. So there's a lot of time requirements that just can't be met. And whether that's being, you know, interrupted by a fight downstairs or whether that's a parent coming in. So, I mean, those are things that we can't really deal with from our standpoint and how we work with principals. But I think a lot of the barriers also exist around the work that's involved with going to observe a teacher. So if I have to deliver feedback within a couple of days to the teacher, it needs to be meaningful, high quality. There's just a lot of process that they have to follow around giving feedback. And I mean, part of that is to maintain your integrity, but part of that also holds it back. And I think there's just this stigma around doing observations and giving feedback that prevents it from happening. So I think it's just the tedium involved in that and taking notes and evidence that's been written and having to transcribe that into a certain format is probably the hours that keep a simple observation from happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've never heard anyone say, you know, this is not what I got into this to do. I mean, this is absolutely, you know, we're talking about the heart of our work, being in classrooms and looking for great teaching and providing coaching support and providing feedback and, you know, documenting is kind of the necessary evil there. But I think one thing you touched on there that's very real in many parts of the country and in many schools is that there are requirements and there are timelines to this. So it's not as if we're free always to just stroll in and see a great lesson and chit-chat about it over a cup of coffee later. You know, there is process to it. There are requirements. And the timelines often can be very tight. And, you know, for principals, getting to the classroom in the first place is challenging, simply as you noted, because of all the other demands on our time. So as you were developing Teach Boost, how did that inform some of the decisions that you made as you kind of came up with this tool to help school leaders? How did those time pressures and all those requirements and knowing that this is kind of a complicated process feed into the design of Teach Boost?
Well, I mean, that pretty much is what drove the development. We're kind of believers that if we take the friction out of the process, if we just take care of those small problems that really provide large barriers to the process, then we'll just get principals, if nothing else, we'll get them in the classroom more often because it's just quicker to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
So having to do the formatting and all that tedium, as I refer to it as, we take care of through that. And that was driven by principals. I mean, we didn't understand this process when we got into it. And we just listened to exactly what they said the requirements were. And we probably ended up with a product that was a little bit more New York City centric than we wanted because we developed it with New York City principals. But we were able to make the right technology decisions to make that more of a central and generic approach that could work really and be customized for anyone. And then as we continued to develop the product, we sort of became more aware of the possibilities. Okay, well, once we remove those time barriers, well, what can happen when a principal can deliver feedback to a teacher as they're leaving the walkthrough?
Right.
So you have instant feedback with a teacher. And what can happen when those great lessons or that great feedback can be made available inside the culture of the school, the community of the school? And that's how we kind of developed from the start until this point.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, one of the things that I really like about web-based applications is that they have the ability to take a whole bunch of steps or a whole bunch of processes and put them all together so that we have something that's all in one place and it takes care of multiple steps at once. And this is something I talk about a lot in my workshops, and I apologize. In advance, when I cover this topic in my workshops, I say, okay, this is hard to set up. You know, this is the hardest part about organizing yourself and thinking about what you're looking for when you're going into classrooms. But once you get a system for yourself so that you can provide that feedback, you know, that's when you can really do quite a bit more. And as you said, it just makes it easier to make time to get in there because you know it's not going to be 15 more steps after you go and visit. I mean, I think that's the thing that's always kind of at the back of our minds when we go and, you know, visit a classroom. You know, for me, this was a big revelation. I was reading in Kim Marshall's book, Rethinking Teacher Supervision and Evaluation, excellent book. He said, until I started actually writing down which classrooms I went to and how often, I didn't realize it, but I was visiting the best classrooms the most and the worst classrooms the least. And I found that to be true of my own practice as well, that I would tend to avoid classrooms where I thought there was a higher chance that I might see something that I don't particularly like, because I know that might give me 10 or 15 more things I have to do to follow up. But you know, when we look at it, that's the work, that's the job of being an instructional leader, to be in every classroom and to know that practice and to be able to provide support for it and take whatever steps need to be taken to ensure that we're providing great instruction for every kid. So I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about what TeachBoost specifically does, because I assume it's a new tool to just in the last couple of years, and it's probably new to most of our listeners. What's actually built in to the software that you've developed? What does it do?
So essentially, it's a web-based collaboration tool for sharing and delivering feedback with teachers. And really, we want all of the coaching that could possibly happen inside of a school to live on this platform, so that, number one, it, you know, saves time for administrators, but two, it really provides a resource for teachers to go to. So a really simple example of why that's important for teachers going after tenure. If you switch schools in the 3 years that you're going through the tenure process, and you need to identify observations from that first or second year, even if it's, say, you had a new principal, tracking those observations down is an absolute nightmare for a teacher. And so providing just a simple place to collect that and organize it is powerful. And then on top of that, you can always review the feedback. You could see, am I growing professionally? Am I being supported? And that hits a little bit on this mutual accountability that we talk about, of our administrators visiting the classroom to support teachers and our teachers receiving and acting upon that feedback. So that I think it opens up the dialogue a bit, which is important. And it also just what I call grease the wheels on the process. You take that 15-step process, automate a lot of those steps. So one of the big things that we help principals do is translate the observation itself into the final product for the teacher, something that used to take up to 10 hours. And it's a simple automated task now.
And as you said, it's built into the steps that you take even when you're actually in the classroom. Before you leave, you can get that taken care of. Is that right?
Exactly. So walkthroughs, you know, or snapshots, whatever you call them at your school, you can give those to the teacher. They can be waiting in the email inbox of that teacher as you're leaving the classroom. And you can get rid of those post-it notes that are usually stuck to the wall as you leave. And who knows if the teacher ever gets them. You can also leave resources for the teacher as well. So, you know, if you give feedback on questioning techniques and you have some professional development resources at your disposal that you want to provide to the teacher, you can give them to them directly on the system.
Nice. So one of the things that I think is kind of funny about our education system in the U.S. is that it's not necessarily one system. And you talked about how your work has primarily been in the New York City area. But I have found in my work with principals around the country that there's tremendous variation in in the specifics of how we go about all these different steps of observing instruction and providing feedback and collecting evidence and doing evaluations and so forth. Where does the flexibility come in? Because for a long time, I think I said when we first spoke that I have really hesitated to comment on any app for instructional leadership, because I felt like there's quite a bit of restriction and narrowness in how most tools are designed. How did you approach that issue of variation and the need for flexibility as you developed TeachBoost?
So that was actually the number one priority when we got started, a little bit for selfish reasons and also kind of maybe a little bit jaded as well. I used to do some consulting work and found that every time I'd develop a tool or the team would develop a tool, the requirements would increasingly change and switch. And I think you find that in just about every industry.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think you definitely hear about that in education, how requirements change year to year.
Yeah.
And kind of having what I think I'd love to call foresight, but it was more hindsight to basically design the product in a way that could be adapted to anything. So what we developed was what we often compare to SurveyMonkey or Google Forms, in that we give principals, districts, cities, states full control over everything that's collected in terms of data. So that gives the principal control to satisfy the city or the state requirements while still bringing in their own pieces that they want to collect or evaluate or provide feedback upon.
Right. So say a principal has two forms. They have a district form that's required for the formal observations, and that has to be filled out in a very particular way and turned in on a particular timeline and signed off on and so forth. And then let's say they also have an initiative in their school that's kind of their idea and something they've developed with their team and are working on as a school priority. And then that maybe is something that shows up in walkthrough feedback. Maybe that's something they visit classrooms looking for evidence of. How would those two things, both the formal observation form and the more informal, or at least not district, but school level priorities in terms of data collection, how would those show up in TeachBoost?
So it's completely integrated and seamless. You basically decide, okay, today I'm going in to do a walkthrough or maybe initiative that you were just referring to, and it's marked as such, and that data can be delineated as such. So if you wanted to just look at for maybe evaluation purposes, we do have some schools that do formal evaluation on the system. You can delineate and say, I just want the data that relates to formal evaluation. Mm-hmm. Or you can look at fine-tune reports on what the responses were for a particular initiative. Say, like, we have a lot of schools doing bulletin board checklists or classroom environment checklists and such, just to say, 75% of our classrooms have a word wall and the other 25% don't. And how do we rectify that? And using that data in aggregate for powerful reasons. And it's easy for a principal or a coach or even a teacher to define their own template. So peer observations are an awesome application of this, and the template editor is very, very simple to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the peer observation thing. And the one of the features that surprised me when I logged in to look at what you're developing is the idea of goals. And it sounds a little silly to say that was a surprise, but in all the observation forms I've looked at and helped people develop, the aspect of teacher goal setting and progress toward those goals and helping with the documentation of evidence toward those goals, I thought was a really powerful thing to include there. Can you talk about the goal feature and what that does?
Yeah, definitely. So as we were going through the first year of working with schools, we learned a lot more about the teacher development process and a lot of what goes into coaching teachers. And what we realized is, you may have a city or a state framework that includes 20, 30, 50 different standards that the teacher needs to focus on or meet. But what would often happen is at the beginning of the year, you'd take two or three of those and you'd identify those as professional focus areas. And a lot of times what they're being observed on in the classroom by administrators or coaches overlaps with the goals that are set by the teachers. Mm-hmm. So we decided, kind of as an experiment at first, okay, well, what happens if teachers set their goals on a system that they're also being observed on? And what happens when that data is linked? So every time an administrator observes a teacher, that supports the development of that teacher's goal or focus area. And then we also took it a step further to say, okay, well, if I'm doing a bunch of snapshots and I don't want this gigantic template that consists of 50 standards, what about what we call a goal-based observation? So let's take those three or four focus areas that that teacher's working on and get rid of everything else from the template. Just include those four things and have the administrator or coach give feedback on just those areas. And it's become powerful because it's takes out that step of, you know, feeling like goals and observations and feedback are completely separate things, because they're all, you know, one and the same, I think, and they all, you know, have very strong ties to each other.
Absolutely. And I love that idea of looking at different kind of zoom levels for the feedback that we're providing, because I think there are a number of ways we can do this badly. You know, we can do the, you know, your final evaluation is based on whether your bulletin board was updated in the last 14 days or not. You know, we can do nitpicky stuff like that that's high stakes that doesn't really serve anybody well. Or we can make the opposite mistake, which is to stay so far in the abstract that we never get into helpful feedback for teachers, and the judgments that principals make are hard to defend if they get challenged. So if I understand correctly, what you're saying is there's a lot of flexibility to do exactly what we need, which is pick a level of focus and pick an area of focus and do the observation based on that, so that we can support a specific goal or a specific priority. Or if we do need to get a comprehensive formal observation done, we can do that as well. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And often you look at the standards that teachers are supposed to be working on, and a lot of times they'll be like questioning techniques or something like that, or classroom management. And, you know, those are pretty big things that you can work on. They're kind of abstract in some ways.
Sure.
So what we've developed is the flexibility to be able to have a tactical maybe checklist or a focused template that's small, short, and easy to do peer observations or coaching on, and link it back to those. So like you can implement practices that involve classroom management and have that support the accomplishment of a goal. There's a lot of flexibility depending on sort of the, you know, how long I think schools have been using TeachBoost. They'll kind of learn the ins and outs on connecting all these different pieces together.
Yeah. One curveball, if I can throw you a curveball here, and
I'll
give you a second here. So one of the things that I notice about the best evaluation rubrics is that they include the behind-the-scenes work that teachers do. For example, Charlotte Danielson's rubric covers planning and preparation as domain one, and then two and three are, the second and third domains, are those that happen when students are in the classroom. But then domain four is about professional responsibility and all the things that go on behind the scenes to contribute to great teaching. Do you have any thoughts on how instructional leaders can collect evidence of those kind of behind the scenes aspects of good planning? Because I think in our culture today and in the media, we hear the message that great teaching is the wizardry that happens at the front of the room when the kids are present. But I have to tell you, as a principal, I see a lot of the success being rooted in what happened the night before when the teacher was putting the lesson together and planning it, or the week before. Do you have any thoughts on how that can be worked more into the process that instructional leaders go through?
Absolutely. When I played football in high school, our coach used to say, and I think this is pretty common in sports, is you don't win the game when you play it. You win it the 4 days leading up to the game in practice. And I think it's obviously a little bit different with teaching, but I think the preparation and the planning is just as key as the delivery of a lesson. And we absolutely want to try to get as much as we can about what that teacher is doing in terms of showcasing the work, the planning, the interaction with parents, community involvement, all of those things that you just talked about when you referenced Danielson's rubric. Mm-hmm. And we want to bring that in as a portfolio, in essence. So a teacher can say, okay, well, I was interacting with this parent. We had this email exchange where we talked about the student's particular needs, and that should serve as evidence, or that should serve as a showcase piece for how that teacher is supporting her students beyond just in the classroom. And so that's why with the goals specifically, and also just generally, you can add any sort of file, media, email, or anything like that to this what we like to think of as a whole portfolio on what you're doing as a teacher.
Nice. Yeah, and that portfolio approach, I think, is important when you know, there's never going to be an observation where your administrator sees you making a phone call and grading papers and, you know, planning instruction, because it is behind the scenes stuff. So I think that approach is an important piece, you know, and I think it's one that serves a complement. You know, I think at the same time, you know, there's not, you know, all the binders full of evidence in the world can't substitute for seeing a lesson. So, I definitely think we need both. But that's nice to have it all in one place.
Yeah, and the other thing that you sort of hit on with this concept is the idea of parent and student feedback. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another place where we're trying to encourage some of our schools to go. It's another piece of the puzzle, and I'm sure you saw the Met report that suggests that student feedback is a huge piece of it, whether informal or anecdotally or as like a survey. So I think that could be a really powerful tool in addition.
Yeah, definitely. So I have to ask about the iPad, because you can't develop education software these days without immediately being asked, does it work on the iPad? And so I logged into your website first on my computer, and I thought, wow, these buttons are really big, and this looks really nice. And then you told me, hey, this works on the iPad. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the design considerations for the iPad and, you know, spotty wireless and all the things that we deal with walking around our schools with iPads?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think there's ever been the type of penetration with a technology product, at least, you know, in my experience and my short time dealing with education, like the iPad. And I go into New York City schools on a weekly, sometimes daily basis, and everyone's got iPads that they're roaming the schools with. So that was really important in the beginning to define, okay, what's our strategy when it comes to mobile access, iPad access, and also, you know, there's a lot of typing involved with observations in some cases, and we want to make sure that we can support just about every device. And so kind of selfishly, we chose to do something that's web-based because, number one, we only have to develop for one code base. We don't have to develop an app plus a website plus an Android app.
Right.
But two, what's really important, often overlooked, is when you have an app and you have a site and maybe you have an Android app, you're introducing different user experiences across those platforms. And it's really important, I think, to be able to get up and running quickly on a tool that you're using. And if you have to not only learn one version of that tool, but also a second version through an app interface, I think that can often make the process of learning it much more cumbersome. So that's sort of why we decided that everything is going to work perfectly on the iPad, first on the web. And then once you have it working on the iPad, you know, Safari browser, well, it will work perfectly on a laptop or desktop. And that allows principals or coaches or teachers to seamlessly switch between the two devices, because some things are really designed to be used for the iPad. We have something called a comment bank where you can check off evidence as sort of a boilerplate feedback, but we tell principals to go back to your laptop or desktop and then personalize and make that actionable for what you saw in that lesson.
That's great. So this question I want to ask, because I know you have a good answer to it, but also because I want to throw down the gauntlet here for every other developer of web-based software. What happens if you lose your wireless signal when you're in the middle of an observation?
So when we first developed this, this was probably the first major lesson that we learned, is that schools, especially where we were working, don't have the strongest Wi-Fi in some cases. It's getting better, though, which is really encouraging, and more schools are getting Wi-Fi. But we had a couple observations that were lost, probably the first early version of the software. And so what we had to do was basically build in this offline capability. So you could basically start an observation and do the complete observation without having an internet connection, and it'll notify you that you don't have connection. And then once you reestablish connection, say in your office or another classroom, we'll resync with the server. So it all happens in the background. The only thing that you know is that you're offline, and that once you reestablish a connection, you'll be good to go. But that was a really important consideration. And the other thing we do is we save everything to make sure that nothing's lost. So even if you should, you know, lose the Wi-Fi connectivity and things don't seem to be working, all of those things that you've done up to that point are saved. So it's very, very important to us if there's no data loss.
Nice. And there's no black magic or animal sacrifice or incantations involved in that, right? It's just technology, right?
Yep. It's, yeah, that's all.
All right. So everybody else who develops educational software that's web-based, or any kind of software that's web-based, I got to say that is an amazing feature, and I think is a huge service to principals, because yeah, we don't have the Wi-Fi everywhere we want it, and those data plans get expensive, and even those don't work, you know, inside the stone fortresses that we call our schools. So nicely done there. I really got to hand it to you on that front.
On that note too, I mean, the one thing that the iPad gives developers, speaking kind of from my engineering perspective, it gives you a little bit of standardization on what browsers are going to be accessing the site. So the big worry about, say, doing an offline HTML5 application is that Internet Explorer won't support it, or something that's non-standard will throw a curveball. But because you know that you're dealing with Safari of a certain version, you can assume that when someone's using an iPad that you have this functionality, which really helps the otherwise fragmented web browser situation.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, thanks so much for your time. So Jason, where can people find out more if they're interested in TeachBoost or interested in what you're doing, try things out?
TeachBoost is at teachboost.com or TeachBoost on Twitter. You can actually sign up and try out the site. You can use it for up to 5 teachers if you're an instructional coach or you just want to get a feel for the system. And you can always reach me at jason@teachboost.com, and I'd be happy to talk to you or hear your feedback.
Well, thanks, man. This has been great. Really excited to geek out with you about iPad software and instructional leadership. Those are my two biggest things besides coffee. Do you like coffee?
Oh my God, yeah.
We'll have to do another podcast then.
That's my juice.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time. Happy Friday, and we'll be in touch.